Hi, everyone out there. I wanted to start out this episode by giving a little introduction. I had the privilege of speaking with a woman by the name of Trish, Trish Valleys, and she reached out to me through my email address after listening to the podcast and felt that she could add some to the podcast. She's looking at starting up her own podcast, dealing with her own story and other people's stories, and possibly having support groups. She's written a book. She's in the process of doing that and finalizing that as well. I'm really excited to bring this podcast episode to you and be able to tell her story. So without any further hesitation, without any further ado, I will go ahead and start my conversation with Trish Valleys.
So I mean, I've been flying by the seat of my pants with this whole thing.
Oh, good.
I mean, I just
So
kind
you
of
can train me how to fly by the seat of
I just kind of I feel like when I do my podcast, it's just kind of talking, So I'm just
Right.
kind of it's like I would be talking to a friend. So I mean, I don't, obviously I'm not a psychologist or anything else. So anything anybody else can bring to the table. I mean, I would just be curious really to start with the beginning of your story.
The start of my story really was sort of towards the end of the relationship of the man I was married to. It was my second marriage. My first marriage was a man much older than myself, and whose first wife had unfortunately died. And he had two girls, so I've got two grown-up daughters. And we had an amazing time. Lovely. And then I decided I wanted children of my own, and but his health had failed, so we did part company. And then unfortunately he sort of died. Sort of. He actually died a couple of years later. He didn't sort of do it, he did it. So I think my first experience of marriage was a really good one. But by that time, I was sort of in my mid-30s, and the body clock was ticking. And he sort of brought me around to this idea that children were fantastic and families were fantastic. So I think maybe I headed into the next relationship in a bit of a hurry, because I was thinking, well, I want my children, I want children, I want children. And also, through this rose-coloured spectacles of having had one great relationship where everything was just perfect. Well, it was just great. Well, obviously we had bad times, but most of
Of
it was good
course, but
times.
like normal,
Yeah,
healthy times
absolutely healthy. And
and
I firmly believe, because he was such a lot older than me, well, I've got my two children and you need to go and get your children elsewhere, was him letting me go rather than we broke up and it was all bitter and anything like that. We were always the best friends. My stepdaughters are still my best friends, and I've got their children, my grandchildren, and a great grandchild, so we've still got a very close family, and they've been very close with my son. So I think there was some blinkers on
Right.
when I went into the relationship, and some red flags that I might normally have gone, oh, that's a bit. It didn't. It didn't occur to me. It didn't occur to me that he was also in his late 30s and had never had a very long-term relationship. He'd had one or two, but only sort of months type of thing, and never been married. And actually, sort of, that sort of stands out really in my mind nowadays, rather than somebody who's had a relationship, got some children, or divorced, or got some baggage going on. And but it's a very insidious thing, this narcissism, I think. And I didn't actually realize it until we were three parts of the way down the divorce route, and I read some articles online, just happened to read them and think, oh my God, this fits him exactly. It's the modus operandi. Because, and people sort of say about victims of narcissism, but I didn't ever feel a victim because I didn't know he was a narcissist. So I just felt everything that was going wrong was because I wasn't doing things properly, or I was getting it wrong, or it was my fault, or and then there's this slow loss of confidence, loss of self-esteem, you know. And we, you know, at first everything was great and this, that, and the other, and then we, you know, we went down the route of having a child, having a baby, and that was lovely. And then because I'd stopped working, going out to work and meeting people, and then he wanted to move suddenly to quite a isolated area and take up farming, which even his family seemed surprised at that, because they had a farm. He'd lost his father some years before, but actually in that area of the UK, it was very patriarchal. So had the eldest son wanted the farm, father would have left the farm to the eldest son, but he hadn't been left the farm, so he wanted to start again from scratch. So but even these sort of things didn't really lay flags for me, and I said, well, I'm not really a farmer, I've been rurally grown up and all the rest of it, but you know, it wasn't what I saw for my rest of my days, because the to be fair, in the UK it's not, it's very hard work. You've got to be very dedicated, and doesn't produce very much. And I didn't want us stuck in the hills of nowhere for the rest of our lives. But I said, we'll have a go, and for a few years, but you know, then we move on. So it was all that kind of stuff. So you're always busy, and then you've got a new baby, and then I'd never been a birth, you know, never had my own children, babies before, because my stepdaughters were sort of 9 and 13 when I met my husband, first husband. Right. So you're just busy, and when things don't go quite right, you just sort of think, oh, it's down to me, or this, that, and the other. And you gradually drop out of your social circles and society. And because I was a little bit older, mum, having babies, you know, my other friends had their babies. So you're out of the circle, really. And there's nobody really going, hey, hang on a minute. You know, what's going on here? You know, are you recognizing what's happening here? And you just sink into this pattern of life, and then you start sort of feeling, actually, this isn't quite right. I, you know, let's negotiate, let's talk about this and see what we can do to change. And then you wait to see if there's a change, and then there isn't. So something else happens and you go, well, should we go this way or should we do that? And so it was quite a long time, you know, well, 14 or 15 years overall before it got to the point that I thought, actually, well, it was longer than that, 15 or 16. And I started saying, this is just isn't going to work. You know, we need to do something and take some action, because I'm not living waiting to see what you decide we're going to do with the rest of our life. You know, I was working, I don't know how many hours a day, because the farm wasn't making any money. But of course, I was trying to carry on doing some work and getting an extra income going, and this, and money just kept disappearing. Just kept disappearing out of the account.
Dumped back into the farm, or like,
you know, or then there'd be an instance of, you know, if money arrived in the bank account, you know, like we used to do poultry for the Christmas market and what have you. And so it would be good at Christmas, but I'd be exhausted because of the deliveries and all the rest of it. But then in January, we still got no money. And you'd say, well, why have you taken that out of the account? Oh, because a few years ago, it had a loan from, you know, another member of the family, and it needed paying back. And I was thinking, well, where's that come from? But it never occurred to me to question and doubt and go, well, show me the loan agreement or things like that. So we constantly lived in this It just got worse and worse, that working all the hours that God sends, and never getting anywhere, and feeling like I was wading through treacle all day long.
Did it seem like, you know, doing all the work, was there a lot of blame cast in your direction?
Absolutely, because you know, he'd been in the country all his life. Well, so have I, fairly rural, but I'd be like a city slicker, and because right. I was a financial advisor prior to meeting him, and this and it was like when our finances, and I'd say, well, what's happened here is that, well, you're the financial, you're whiz kid, you've got it, you know. It was like the constant put down, and right. then he started with our son, that he wasn't very bright, you know, think you're bright, mm. think you're this, that, and the education isn't worth it. And our friends, you know, they're not worth it. They're ripping it. Everything was my fault always. Right. And then it got very difficult to continue my work because he wouldn't turn up to, I'd make appointments to go and see clients and he wouldn't turn up to look after our son. And it just was a spiral downwards. And no matter, I've now realised, and I've now read about it, that actually yeah. I'll never be yeah. good enough. And neither will my son. Ever, right. ever, ever will we be good enough. But I kept thinking, well, he has lived in the country all his life. He's been on a farm before. He's done this. And so what if I, you know, it must be me. It must be me, you know. I think... Additionally, we'd had to go for IVF treatment to have our son. And of course, that was my fault because I was old. And so I think that might have been a start of the feeling it must be something to do with me, really, you know. Right. And actually, the science says that it's male and female, it's the female egg, but the male sperm is a bit right. lazy and a bit, you know. Yeah. But he was one of six children, so there clearly wasn't a problem on his side of the family. So I think some of it started that way. And then it was just, you know, every bit of the money, this, that, and the I just didn't matter. He would make decisions, you know, for all of us without entertaining them. But he would talk to his family about it and then make the decision and say, I've decided. And that was that. And things like we would come home and he'd sold my car to somebody, or he sold my son's pet dog.
Oh, my God. Somebody.
One day when he came home from school, his dog was gone. Oh. And it's just these kind of things that in the end, and you're trying to
say,
sorry,
you know, if you have anything to say about it, then it's just, you know, all hell's gonna break loose.
Yeah, well, you go out and find the money. We're not doing that. It was absolutely his respect for anybody. But it was behind closed doors, because if anybody came, he was like, you know, or if we went to the school, on the rare occasions he rocked up at the school to see anything of Penry's, he was like the perfect dad.
Right.
And it was me that, you know, was doing something wrong. And I suppose it just got my confidence. It just got me completely down, you know.
It makes you feel like you're going insane.
I did. And then I started getting very emotionally upset and angry about it.
Right.
And then right. it was me. I've got mental problems. You're losing it. And he'd be telling me that.
Yep.
And, you know, I even remember, let's go for mediation. Well, he didn't rock up to the first two meetings of mediation. Right. And then the third meeting, I couldn't get a word in edgeways. I was a bit distressed that the counsellor didn't stop him, but he spent a whole hour moaning about me. It was like his platform to go, bleh. And yeah. She did say at the end of it that she said, you've actually made it sound not like a relationship or a marriage, but more like a business deal, you know, and talking in money terms. And so I don't think there's really much hope for your relationship. So she didn't really try. It was a bit of a box-ticking exercise, I think. But anyway.
Like a lot of therapists don't know what to do with narcissists.
I don't think, and don't forget, this is all sort of starting 2014, 2015.
Right. So, yeah, it's coming more around now, for sure.
Yeah, because coercive control had just become a crime. It was only in 2015 in the UK, England and Wales, it became a crime. So I think, you know, a lot of things went wrong when I tried to ask people for help, like the police, like the mediator, like solicitors, that they because weren't they recognizing it. So I'm trying to be kind to them. I mean, yeah, there's still a question of equality between men and women, you know, and which didn't happen, and that's been on the cards a lot longer than coercive control or manipulation and a narcissist manipulate. And then you're going, well, you haven't got a diagnosis. Well, what else would you like to call it then? Call it what you like. This is the behavior, you know. You can put whatever label you like on it. This is behavior. So it just went downhill, and I petitioned him for, after we'd done the mediation, I petitioned him for the divorce. And then all hell broke loose. There was delays about, well, our son was coming to sitting in the exam stage of his education, so it would be better not to sell his home up and this, that, and the other. So I agreed to wait, you know, for 9 months. So we're stuck in the house. But of course, you know,
outside
I set
of,
the ball.
You had agreements with them, right? Outside of
agreement, and then he wouldn't follow through with it. So, you know, son got to his exams, did his exams, and I went, right, now we need to put the place on the market, sell it and go. You know, go our separate ways. Then it was okay, but he didn't. So then I had to get legal a solicitor involved, petition him, and funnily enough, and I blame the solicitors. They didn't protect me on it, because by that time I'm completely weary. I'm completely desperate to leave and in the best, quickest way possible. So when he says, there's these assets. And of course the debts had been put in my name, the loans, the debts. We'd built our own house, but then he wouldn't allow a kitchen. We wouldn't have a kitchen or a television or a bed or cooker. So I had to get those. I had to get a loan to get those, to get the house finished. Because what are we going to live in otherwise, you know? And we'd paid joint money to build the house, but then I had to. Right. So I'd got all the debts. Then he came with a £50,000 loan to his brother, and my solicitor never advised me to ask, where's the paperwork for that? And when did you make that £50,000 loan? No, I just accepted it. And I just accepted anything that he said, and just so that I could leave, you know? So it was ended up instead
I mean, that's part of it. If I hadn't gotten an attorney beforehand, I mean, I was ready to give up. Like, you know, I talked to my sister, and my sister was like, no, don't give up too much, because you're going to regret it. You know, she's going to take you for everything. You need to go through a lawyer, because if you don't, she's going to take everything. And just because I know you want out now, but you have to fight for it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, I tried my best, and of course. But it is so draining. It's so terrible. And then because we were living in the same house still, I mean, I'd moved out of the bedroom, and, you know, was trying to, I put a lock on the bedroom door because, you know, so he couldn't come in, it was this, that, and the other. And then he picked the lock one night and attempted to rape me. I ran from the house. I phoned the police. Well, I didn't phone the police then. I just waited till the next morning. I slept in my car and waited till the next morning. And I didn't know what to do. And I spoke to some friends, and they said, which I can see their point of view. They said, well, the thing is, you need to report it, because If that ever happened again and you pushed him away or something and he fell, hit his head and died or was injured or something, but they haven't got any history of anything being reported, then you could be in a real difficult place. And I went, oh, okay. So I rang and I reported it to the police. The like non-emergency police. Well, they took the statement over the phone and then some police rang me later that day to say, well, we really need to come to the house and interview you. I said, really? I said, I really don't think that's very safe for me, for you to rock up at our house and interview me. You know, I said, I really don't feel very safe about that because that might get more dangerous than ever. And so anyway, they interviewed me. I was sitting in my car on the side of the road somewhere in the hills, and they interviewed me like that. And then they gave me a code word that if it happened again, I said, if it happened again.
Yeah, let's just wait for it to happen again.
We'll just wait for it to happen again. Okay, okay. But you were married to him. You were married to him. He's your husband. I said, it's rape. It doesn't matter who he is. It's rape. It doesn't matter if it's a woman or a man. It's rape. And you just think, it must be me then. I must be in the wrong. You know, because nobody is supporting me. I said to my solicitor about it because we're still on our way to court. Because after Tony, him agreeing a settlement figure, he then, the day before court, phoned me from his solicitor. Oh, he said, if you just instruct your solicitor, I'll get my solicitor to type up the agreement and we'll both sign it. So I disinstructed my solicitor, got his solicitor to type up the agreement. And I said, well, look, we're due in court the next day. I've done my bit. When are you going to do yours? He said, well, I'm going into that town today. I'll go into the solicitors and I'll sign the agreement. And then you don't have to go to court tomorrow. Okay. Well, he phoned me at midday and we were due in court 9 o'clock the next morning and said, oh, I've spoken to my solicitor. I've offered you too much. I'm not going to sign the agreement.
Always something last minute.
I had to spend all night up going through the papers to decide what I was going to say in court because I, you know, I had no legal representation by that time, which I think was just their method of doing it, you know. So she sent us away and said, we need this, and that, because it was a farming business partnership as well. There were some issues to resolve and what have you. Well, and then I started. Oh, then two police turned up to collect our guns and firearms because we got shotguns because on the farm, you're shooting vermin, you're shooting the foxes, blah, blah, blah. They rocked up to collect the guns, ask us to surrender them because allegations had been made. The allegations. So he was absolutely fuming. He was absolutely fuming. And they said, well, what you could do is you could move out to your mother's. She's got a farm. You could take your guns and firearms to her gun cabinet, go to your mother's, leave the keys with me. I could have kept my guns in the cabinet at the farm, which was going to be sold anyway. But he refused. So they took all our guns, you know. But he was absolutely, completely slating me in front of these two policemen. And I, well, a policeman and a policewoman who said nothing, the policewoman didn't. And as he went with the guns, the guy went and he's raving about me, my ex is, about what bitch I am and effing and blinding. And he went, I know, sir. I understand. He said, I've been divorced twice. And I'm thinking, really? Just chuck a bit of petrol on. You know, why not? I felt like I hadn't got a friend in the world, you know? And so I said to I went back. I instructed a solicitor again. They heard all the history and all this, that, and they get ready for go to court. And then I rang him and said about this, the rape and this. He said, well, I wouldn't report that to the police.
Who was this?
This is my solicitor, divorce solicitor.
Oh my God.
And you think, I'm going mad here. I do think I'm going mad here. Yeah. And then the next day, I used to sleepwalk as a child. And of course, you've told this person all your closest secrets. Well, I have over the years. Yeah. You know, information from when you, or everything. Yeah. And so he knew that as a child, I used to be a bit of a sleepwalker. See, then the house started to be completely trashed in the mornings.
Hmm.
It was completely trashed. And he'd go, you've been sleepwalking again. And I was thinking, there's no other signs that I've been sleepwalking. There's no signs. So I bought myself a Fitbit to track sleep.
Oh, that's
sleep.
Clever. Yeah. Yeah, you have to. Get creative because they'll just make you.
Absolutely. Because I didn't know whether I was losing, and you're losing it and all this, that, and I just didn't know what else to do. But, you know, the next time it happened, the Fitbit said I've been sound asleep, you know? But it was trying to prove to him that I was losing it, you know? So, and our son was actually, he had to be away at college because the area we were in, there's no easy transport links to get him to and from college daily. Right. So he was away during term time. In a way, that was easier because I didn't have to sort of hold it together and, you know, do things to what I felt to keep him, you know, to make sure that our son was okay and not involved in it. It was just getting more and more difficult. And then we sold the farmhouse, but not the ground, and not all of the ground that we owned. You know, but then he wanted the rest of the ground. He thought he'd give me enough, despite the court order saying this is how much he's got to have. He said he'd give me enough, so he wasn't giving me any more, and he wanted the ground for nothing. And you know, he just got worse and worse and worse. And I think actually, since I was apart from him, once I could move out, it just got worse and worse. He stalked me. Well, I now know it's stalking. At the time, you just don't think, you know, that there would be, he would find out where I was staying. There'd be notes under the windscreen of the car, you know, on the windscreen of the car in the morning. It was stuffed in the door wedges. Even my friends where I've stayed at times really didn't want me to stay because they felt unnerved by it because they'd arrive in the middle of the night and things like that. And he was manipulative with our son, constantly, you know, telling, who was at university by that time and out of home, but you constantly be telling our son, you know, he'd try and use our son as the weapon. It was incredibly distressing. I fought as long as I could, and it's cost me vast fortunes emotionally, mentally, and financially. And finally, I just said, you know, and the solicitors will lead you along the path endlessly. Oh, the meeting.
Pause real quick.
Okay.
We're running out of time. Apparently, we have a 40-minute time limit on this meeting, which I was not aware of.
Oh, sorry. And I've talked all the while.
That's fine. You're telling me the story. There's so much to go over. You can't summarize this stuff up and you know.
No.
I'm wondering if we can
should we schedule another? Yeah. Well, can we schedule another one another day as well? Or do part two, or
wait a minute. Like, it says running out of time. We've removed the 40-minute time limit on your group meeting.
We go.
Good. Well, sorry to interject on the end.
No, that's all right. That's okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think then it finally, and it was 7 years. So it's 7 years now. since I first petitioned for the divorce. But last November, he finally agreed that any money that the solicitors had led us up the path, go to court. And so I got my case, I got everything ready, because he then, imagine, I forced a sale of the ground. He wanted to be the preferred purchaser. I allowed him to be that. But when it came to the matching the highest bidder, he wouldn't. So it went to his uncle, actually bought the ground. But then we had to wait for the money. Then he wouldn't sign the sale contract because he said I actually owed him money. Mm. And so that all the money got held in court. So then we've been waiting for a court date. And of course, COVID got in the way.
COVID messed everything up.
You know, and the solicitors will endlessly go, yeah. And then they go, well, I think you should make an out of court settlement. And I went, really? But I need the money. the money.
Right.
Anyway, we didn't. We did make an out-of-court settlement, and all what was left of the money after all the fees has gone to our son, which, of course, he wanted it conditionally, that it was in trust, and he was one of the trustees. I said, no, it can only go to our son if it's unconditional. So he can do what he likes with it. He can put it on the next horse race if he wants, you know, but it's unconditional, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And he agreed it. So it's put me in incredible financial straits. My son has actually helped me out with the legal fees, but I had bought myself a little house. And I didn't tell it. Nobody, I was worried at one point because only one friend and my son were the only people that knew where I was. And I was thinking, what if he finds me and something happens?
Yeah.
They're the only two people that know where I am. I've now put that on the market because I need money to live on while I'm building my business back up. I can't believe it all happened last November, but actually I can't believe how much drain there was going on for me, and that now I don't have to wake up every morning.
Yeah.
And it must have been on my mind because I feel like a different person. I do still worry that it got so bad after I'd left that I thought, well, actually it feels more dangerous now.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like a PTSD.
I'm sure there's some PTSD there, and the anxiety. And
yeah.
I mean, I think it took me a really long time to come to the realization that I actually have anxiety, and that there's actually PTSD associated with it. You know.
Yeah.
Even after moving out, I just didn't. Yeah. I guess I'm just not really big into. Maybe for me, it's just the male thing, and, you know, not being vulnerable and blah, 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 and brought up to, like, if you fall down and skin your knee, then get up, toughen up, you know, type mentality.
So yeah.
That's part of what's kind of worn into me with the anxiety. But yeah, I mean, every time I go to pick up my kids, I'm terrified that she's going to say something that's going to trigger something in me. You know,
it's dreadful, isn't it? And even that thinking about it seems to trigger it for me. Mm-hmm. So I've been on the overeating, over drinking, over blah, 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 you know, and now I've been able to block in with everything. But because of the business side of everything, it would just like be, you'd see, you know, when you see an email drop in. Mm-hmm. And you see the subject line and who it is from. And I'd see that and I'd start shaking. I think you were in such a high level of stress when you were in it.
Yeah.
That once you're a little bit further from it, and then you get dragged back into it. It's like, I'd be the jitters. And my therapist actually said, suck lemons, you know, douse your face in freezing cold water to get yourself now. And then deal with it. And I have started really improving on it. I have written a journal, and I have got it's on its way to being published as a book.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. But, you know, even like revisiting it to sort of check the grammar and do some editing. And
it's draining.
I just like go into a spin, you know, yeah. I'm like down here instead of, you know, and I know I've got to do it. And because some of it needs a bit of a rewrite, because even if you redact the names, it would be easily identifiable, really.
Correct. And that's, there's paranoia for me with this podcast, you know, I mean, there's a lot of paranoia for me, especially going through court as is and everything else, you know, trying to get my story out there, you know, and not really, you know, promoting it or telling any of my friends or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because I'm just so paranoid.
Well, I think that's why I really felt when you responded, because there was something in the tone of your thing that I felt, oh, you're like me, you know?
Yeah.
And I just sort of felt, and that I want to do it. I want to do podcasts, and what have you. And I just thought, well, actually, if we start out there in the US and you're with me in the UK, you know, it's that little bit further space, but there's plenty of like minds. So there's even less chance we can be
tracked
down. Do you know what I mean?
The connectivity of this, you know, mental disorder. It's not male, it's not female, it's not necessarily just a problem in one country. I'm sure there's some countries that suffer from it more than others.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, you know, your age, your, you know.
No, there doesn't seem to be a particular pattern, does there? They're everywhere. And
it's not manifest the older you get, though. I have noticed that. It seems like, you know, these things just fester and fester, and the older people get with this, and it just kind of like starts to, the mask starts to come off, or maybe it's they get into serious relationships or get better at their manipulation tactics. I'm not.
Yeah. Or is it when something starts to go wrong and because you're clearly an empath yourself.
Right. Right.
You know, and when their envy gets to a point that they can't be like you.
Right.
You know, does their mask start slipping then? Does it start falling apart with that?
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, although you have a tainted sort of memory, don't you? I don't remember. I didn't see the warning signs, but I don't know that they were necessarily that much of a red flag at that point in time, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't recall, it just has escalated.
Never dealt with it before. So how are you supposed to know the warning signs if you hadn't been educated on it in the past? You just think it's a different person with their own personality, and that's just who they are, you know?
Yes, yes. And you sort of think, oh, well, you know, a little bit of their history, and you think, oh, that could be a reason why he does that, you know? One thing that distresses me is I've told my son endless times, he's going, Dad doesn't love me. Mm. And I've endlessly said to him, no, he does, you know, he absolutely does. He just doesn't know how to show it, or doesn't show it the same as I show it, and a lot of us do. And actually, I then read something about, you know, we spend all our time, we tell our children that an abuser does love them, and then we try to tell a teenager that abuse is wrong. I do think, oh my God, what have I done? You know, just given the draft. A couple of weeks ago, I did give the draft to my son.
That was my question. I was curious as to, I mean, because of the age of your son versus the age of my sons.
Okay.
I'm curious to know how that's working out. You know, like, how's he feeling about his father? How is he feeling towards you? Is he starting to recognize now at this point?
I think he has for a while, and we've talked this for a while, and I introduced the subject of a narcissist to him last year. And I've written to him several times. I've written letters. I've always done it when on his birthday and Christmas anyway, memories and things. And I've written several things because I didn't write anything at first. I didn't want him in the middle. And then I realized that because I hadn't said anything, he was in the middle because he was trying to defend his mum. But I didn't need defending, but he didn't know whether I needed defending. So I did give him some information just for fact, you know, year and a half ago. So he got some facts, and I said, this is not to argue with your dad with, but it's just to let you know so that you know what went on before you were born, and, you know, financially, what the state of play was, so that you know that your mum doesn't need defending. It's okay. And I want you to walk with me because you love me, and we love each other, and we want a relationship together, not yeah. because you want to protect me, you know. It's
right.
So I've already written that to him. And then I did give him the book, and then I did drink a lot of whiskey for a couple of weeks. It's always a way out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to sleep, you know?
I think I need, I'd buy shares in paracetamol or something for hangovers. but actually, I can't tell you his exact words, but he phoned me the one night and said he'd finished the book. And he gave me some really good feedback on a couple of things, how to rearrange and, you know, what my audience might feel, you know. And
he was strictly business. Yeah, he's like,
no, he said, Mum, I am so proud of you. I'm so in awe of how brave and how resilient you are, and everything that you've done, and how you've kept it going. And, you know, I only wish I'd done more to protect you. You know, I realized I should have. I said, Henry, you're my son. Yeah, the parent protects the child. You don't have to do, you know. But and it wasn't to make you feel anything like that. It was for you to understand that this is coming. It's going to be redacted, but I'm, you know, this is my story. But he's been fabulous. He's been absolutely fabulous since. He phoned me yesterday to say that he'd got another job, and it's really good in COVID, and he's paying twice as much and blah, blah, blah. And that he's, and I was so proud. I said, I'm so proud, and you've done so well and worked so hard. And I said, have you told the family? What about your dad? What's your dad say? He said, I haven't told him. I said, oh. I said, oh. And he said, well, it's not the same. It's not important to him. And it's nothing to him, me. But you are everything to me. I was like, ooh. You know, I can't remember all his exact words. I just know that they absolute glow. So I can only say to you, it is scary. It's really scary. And are your children still at home, or what sort of age are your children?
Well, my youngest is 6 and my eldest is about to be 13. So, and we're dealing with a lot of isolation, not only because of COVID, but because, you know, early on in their, you know, school life, she convinced me that, you know, we need to homeschool.
Oh, no.
Which, knowing from knowing a narcissist, you know.
Of course.
I didn't think much of it, but, you know, isolation, control. You know, they do have co-ops that they're involved with, but she's got a very firm grip over the other parents that go there to one of them. I was able to kind of gain access to one day before COVID happened for the other homeschool day. When everything started to fall apart, it was amazing how many parents came out of the woodworks, you know, to be like, oh my gosh, you know, I never really, you know, I noticed the way she talked to you. I noticed this, I noticed that, you know, I've had homeschool moms, homeschool dads, you know, like I never thought that it was right the way that she treated you. I never, you know, there were times and they would bring up stuff that I totally forgot because there's so many different things, you know, they just kind of pick and poke and make fun of you in front of others and everything else.
It's just an endless thing, isn't it? Yeah, an endless thing for you. Yeah.
But I mean, right now through the courts, one of the big things is I'm trying to push to get them back into public school. Yeah, but that's kind of the big battle right now and going between. And so now I have to interact with her on the 2 days that I have the kids on schooling, and she's been really difficult on curriculum and getting the curriculum to me properly and everything else. And you know, I've had to pull every single time. I have to pull the subjects out of her. What did they do? What did they learn? Where are they at? She refused to give me their curriculum books. Come to find out, she didn't have any actual workbooks. Everything's online. But she didn't want to tell me that. She just kept saying, I have a multitude of curriculum, but not giving me any details. A multitude, a multitude, a multitude. So then, you know, my partner actually went to the store and bought books for them so that we could have actual handwriting notebooks for them and workbooks and stuff like yeah. that. Oh man, it's been hell. And now the judge said, okay, well, while we're doing the homeschool until we figure out what's going on, you pay 75% of whatever classes, she pays 25%. As soon as that judgment went down, she spent $800, $900 on classes and new workbooks and all these unnecessary things. Even though I had just purchased workbooks that she refuses to take. So there's no cohesive, you know, she wants control over it, but at the same time, she could be shooting herself in the foot because I yeah. am communicating with my lawyer. I am communicating with.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a mess. It's a mess. So
how is the legal system with you? How long have you been apart now?
We separated back in
2018. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, I was sleeping in the basement for 2 years, you know, before I finally made my exit. I feel like, you know, I was on the couch for a while, then I was on the basement, but we hadn't shared a bedroom for, you know, since 2017, 2016, probably, you know. So I was still, you know, we were slowly, slowly, you know, just drifting apart, and it just was awful. So
and you try to do things to make it right for your kids, don't you? I think that's another thing. What is the right thing to do or not the right thing to do for the kids? And they make you feel that whatever you do is not the right thing, you know?
Correct.
Yeah
I mean, she's completely beside herself that I am even considering public school at this point. So
how does the system work? Is your solicitor well versed in dealing with narcissism and like and with these
cases kind, and
yeah
the man that I originally talked to, he's kind of the his name's on the firm. Basically, you know, he's one of the high-end lawyers, and he's been around for years.
Right.
I actually handled his accounts for my company, and that's how I met him. You know, he had some of his company's businesses had dealings with ours, and so I handled his business account. And then at some point, the light bulb just kind of switched on. It's like, oh, why don't I call him? You know, so I called him, but his rates are just skyrocketing.
Yeah.
You know, $450, $500 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so clearly I can't afford that. So he kind of, you know, started with me and then passed it off to one of his junior associates basically to kind of handle. And the man I know, he's a killer.
Yeah.
he's dealt with a lot of high conflict cases. He knows exactly how to handle them. Short, simple, direct, let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, not taking no for an answer. So the guy that is my, I guess, lawyer now is, he's very robotic, which is good and bad in a way, because he's not fooling me. He's not, you know, trying to make me feel like we're best friends and waste my time and waste his time. But at the same time, part of me just doesn't know if he actually gets it, like what I'm actually going through. I think he sees it, and I think he's like, yeah, I can see why you're frustrated, but you know, it is getting to a point sometimes to where it's like, I'll make a point to be like, we need to work on this part of the case or that part of the case, and he's just kind of like, oh, okay, and then nothing's ever done, and then I'm like, wait, what? So it's difficult, but there is a lot of communication. I mean, it's hard.
I know. And I think one friend did say to me, don't forget that lawyer, well, certainly we're talking in the UK, but I'm sure it might be the world over. You know, don't forget they're salesmen. They're selling you their services.
Exactly.
So once again, but because we're in the position that we've lost our sort of self-confidence, really, and our belief in our ability to be able to do stuff, we think we need them. And had it gone to court, I had already decided, although I hadn't informed my solicitor, that actually I wouldn't be taking a barrister and I wouldn't be taking a solicitor. I'd go and act in person. I'd decided I could do it and I could tell my story best, you know. And I think she was right in a lot of ways. I just wish I'd met her further back along the road, you know, and sort of thought, actually, I'll deal with it myself. But I don't know the rules in the States, you know, about trying to get this, you know. And do you ever get continual custody of the children, or you just have to?
Right now, it's still kind of, nothing's been fully ordered by the judge. So right now, the order is, you know, we're kind of a joint custody right now. You know, I have 2 days because I do work full time. I have 2 days. Even pick up drop off time was a battle that went back and forth with amendments for, you know, if I was going to be 20 minutes late for pickup, then I wasn't going to be able to see them and she would keep them for the 2 days. But I've consistently been on time all the time. That's a really big deal for me. And every time I've gone to drop off, before we had an agreement, it was always, you know, last minute. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm running late. I'll be there in an hour. I'll be, you know, she was always an hour late here, 2 hours late, you know, sitting in the driveway waiting for her. So I wanted the judge to be like, okay, well, if she's late, then I get to bring him back to the house and just keep him as long as I want, you know, or something like, as long as I want. But she loses her visitation, her time back with the kids. But of course, that was a long shot. But she wanted no checks and balances. She wanted me to strike anything about her being late, you know, completely. So it's just been back and forth. And I mean, my son has been saying he wants more time with me. My younger son, especially, saying 2 days just isn't enough. He wants, he's like, why can't it be 3 days and 3 days? And then like drop off in the afternoon on the fourth day. So that way you can split one day and have three and three, you know, which is something that, you know, I might start discussing and petitioning, you know, before this is all said and done. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but obviously the more time they're with me, I feel like when I pick them up, there's still some anxiety at pickup because they're afraid we might get in an argument. She might say something. I'm going to be reactive because I really have zero fucks at this point for her.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely, you know, what they call the reactive abuse, you know? She starts something. And at this point I have no filter. I'm just kind of like, I do. But it's usually, I'm either completely stonewalling her and don't say anything, but then she just keeps poking and keeps poking and keeps poking and keeps poking. And I bark.
And you lose it.
Yeah. And then it's a catch 22. I don't say anything, she wins. If I say something, she wins. Like, you know, and then it's just kind of like,
it's just like, you will never be able to do the right thing. I know it exactly. I know absolutely exactly how that feels. And I just, and then I used to really dislike myself because I used to lose my temper.
Yeah, and then it's like,
and be like, ah! And yes, it's so not you. It's so not you. And
like,
I actually, well, that was why I contacted a therapist initially to over anger management, because I thought, yes, I am. I'm angry all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he did say, you know, you've had all this, you can't beat yourself up and you can't be angry because, you know, all of these things.
Yeah.
You know, let's just, you know, be kind to yourself and forgive yourself these things. And I think until you can put distance, and it's very, very difficult because my son was older. So he couldn't quite vote with his feet, but he's been off to university, etc., etc. And he did say, "Mom, why did you stay so long? Why did you do it so long?" And I thought, I don't know, but then I did think maybe it was because I was so afraid of what would happen if I couldn't have been there. You know, if we'd have left earlier when he was younger, you're not there. They have to have the contact. And because there's nothing concrete that you could say, he didn't beat our son. He didn't beat me in front of anybody, you know, physically violent in front of anybody. There's no evidence. I got no evidence.
So then you just come off sounding like a crazy person. Because then it's like, why did you leave? And then you're like, oh, well, let me tell you. And then you're rattle, 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 rattle. And they're like, okay, crazy. You know, like, that's like,
and he's already put it out there with his family, with his friends, with other people that she's the one that loses her temper and she's the one that does so and so. And I'm thinking,
he's already covered his tracks.
Absolutely. And but I was losing my temper, you know, and I'm thinking, I could lose my child. And I, you know, I've done work with.
Because you're being reactive. You know, you're being reactive to the abuse, and eventually you've had enough, and then you just blow up, and that's where they want you, and then the cycle starts, and then they gaslight you into believing that it's your
fault.
It's
just like a bloody vicious circle, isn't it? It's just terrible.
And then you sit there and question yourself, and you say, am I going crazy? Am I going crazy? I need to be better. I need to be a better person. I need to, you know, and then you start internalizing it, and you start viewing yourself in this way, like, I need to take on more responsibility. Maybe I'm not really, you know, maybe I'm casting the blame in the wrong spot. Like, and then you just, oh my God, it wasn't until I started talking to you know, my sister, really, like, I just bawled, you know, like, when I finally told her everything that was going on. I just lost it. I mean, it was like, I had a nervous breakdown, and she was just kind of like, she's like, after I said everything to her, she's like, I mean, there's a lot that surprises me, but overall it doesn't surprise me, you know? And that was really shocking, because, you know, they do this circle of triangulating and isolating you from your friends, from your family. I'm sure you know, just this nitpick at just this person and this person and this person, and to where eventually you start to just grow apart from everybody.
Yeah.
And then they have you exactly where they want you. And for you, being isolated on a farm, I mean, she wanted to buy a house out in the country. We just couldn't make it happen. And that's a good thing. She's out in the country. So now she's homeschooling the children. Now she bought a house out in the country with her own flower farm, so she can do her flower farm. And she can't work with others, so she's got to own her own business if she's going to be any kind of successful, because, you know, if anybody gets too close to her, then, you know, that relationship's not going to last. She can't have close friendships. Anyway, this
isn't about your kids' friends. No, it's here. Well, I would really very much like it to be, you know, a two-way conversation, so that we can do another one, and you can tell me your story. You know, I'd really like that, you know, because I think there is a connection, and obviously there's a lot of similarities, and, you know, if there's a way that I can help you from my own experiences, and I suppose that's what I want to do. I am really somebody that I get a buzz helping people, and I get a buzz doing things for people, and so I think the writing the book was, get it off my chest, but also, you know, if somebody's looking for, you know, this is what I did. It might be, well, at least I can read that and think, well, I won't do that. I'll do something different. Do you know what I mean?
A really healthy way for people. I mean, because clearly a lot of people that get bamboozled, especially as long as they do, are because they're empathic, because they want to help, you know, because they're helpers by nature. There's something inside me that gets a rush off of helping other people understand or give different perspective or just empower themselves. I don't think that that's wrong. I think everyone wants some validation in some way or another. And I think, you know, doing this is therapeutic for me, but it's also hopefully helping others, even if it's just relating, even if it's just like you and I. I mean,
and yes, even if you know people dip in and hear this recording or whatever you want to do with it, and they can listen to it and go, "Ah, me too." So they can contact and go, "I'm not alone. I'm not going around the bend. This happens to other people," because it. Yeah. It's difficult with your friends that aren't necessarily in that relationship because you've grown apart from them. They're not necessarily in that relationship, so they can't understand.
Right.
And, you know, I couldn't, because I think, well, I'm moderately, you know, I'm reasonably intelligent. I'm reasonably worldly wise. What on earth? Why did I spend so long like this? But I didn't. You know, that's why it just sort of creeps on, and it's so gradual. I mean, it's accelerated at the end because he's completely venomous.
Because you lose,
you know, I'd left, you know, and he's done everything he can to control every mortal thing to control, you know, right to the very end. So the last one was actually on my birthday. He sent me a, you know, he still sends me something just to, not a happy birthday, but he signs it with a kiss.
Oh my God.
You know, whatever poison, and I'm going to use some of them, I'm going to redact them, but I'm going to use one or two of them instead of illustrations in my book. I thought, I'm going to, and I've actually called my book Without Prejudice, because he learnt that term in the courtroom, completely misunderstood, misread it, and thinks without, if you put Without Prejudice on something, you can say anything you like. So, of course, it's free license. So I actually thought, well, that's a good title for the book. So that's what I'm going to call it.
There's a few different terms that it's like they find these terms and then they just like roll with them because it makes them feel like they sound intelligent. And it's like, you know,
I'm not laughing at your situation, but I'm laughing because it's just exactly.
Yeah. Mirror. I mean, the ex, she always says for the highest good, that's her big term. For a long time, for months, like everything she did, you know, we should really work on this for the highest good, for the highest good of the children, for the highest good of our relationship.
Yeah.
It was just always for the highest good. And it's like, who the hell are you talking to? Like, you don't talk like this. Like, and you know, she always words things in these like very wordy, long, elaborate, confusing, gets you sidetracked over here, gets you sidetracked over there. When I just ask a simple question, you know, and it's just like, what's going on? Well, this needs to be discussed for the highest good. And so my partner went online and made a shirt that says the highest good. So she made her own custom shirt that says the highest good. They're not friends on social media or anything like that. It was just kind of our own little inside, you know, joke. But it's just something
I know he's got this expression and it's, you know, that he was the golden parent, you know, he's always a golden parent and I've stolen the inheritance. I've stolen his farm.
Yeah.
Actually, we didn't have a farm. We borrowed the money off my father to pay the deposit on these fields.
Mm.
I was the one that did the business plan and got the planning permission so we could build a house and build a farm. I built the customers. I sold the goods. But to the outside person, if he spoke to you, you'd have thought that somewhere along the line, he'd got this farm and I just trotted along, you know, and a few years later, I robbed the whole lot off him and took his son's inheritance at the same time, you know?
Yep.
So, and it's just like, you believe what shit you like, mate. You know?
Yeah, I mean, she's got her social media pages, and somehow I'm still, you know, able to access them sometimes. And she blocked me on her personal one, but even on her business one, she started up a GoFundMe account to, I don't know, I think I've said it on my podcast, I think before, but she got like $3,000 to get a lawyer through GoFundMe. You know, from people basically saying she was in an abusive relationship for so long, and now she owns a farm and she's moved out, she's living her dream life, and she's finally getting out from after years of abuse from this horrible man, and she's just trying to start a life with her kids on, and now the abuser is attacking me and trying to take my kids away and all this stuff. And it's just like, what? But does it surprise you? No. I mean, I've done research on this, you know, I've read books on what to expect in a high conflict divorce, what to expect when divorcing a narcissist. Even COVID happening and her blocking me from seeing my kids wasn't a surprise to me, because they're going to use anything in the media, anything in the news, anything, you know, to use against you, especially in court. And that's pretty much what she's doing. Luckily, my judge does not give a shit. So my judge is basically,
that's good that you know, they do stay with it, isn't it? You know, and keep the emotion out of it.
She's very just cut and dry. Like, okay, there's so many papers. There's so much, you know, everything I wrote in my initial statement, she basically truth twisted everything around. And it was this 35-page, 91, you know, questionnaire, or, you know, 91 reasons why I'm the abuser, and just basically took all the situations that actually happened and twisted them around.
Yeah. But one of my points is, the money got held after the it got held by the solicitors. So nobody got any money because he'd made allegations. I within a fortnight of him making those allegations, I had proved that they didn't exist. Right. And that, well, the ones that were real, supposed debts had been paid, or, you know, any bills that he'd paid out of his own personal account, they'd been paid to him from the farm and what have you. Then there was a few instances of sheep that I'd proved that we hadn't bought them off his mother, you know, but I'd proved we hadn't bought them because they weren't in the field records or on the logged onto the system with the government, all the rest of it. But why am I assumed to be guilty? Was my point. But nobody's going, well, you best just answer this. Well, why can't somebody just say, you prove that she did that, rather than I have to prove that I didn't do that?
That's true.
You know? I'm guilty, you know? Yeah.
If you're going to accuse what of happened? Something like that.
Yeah, if you're going to make the accusation, come with the evidence. Because I thought we were innocent until proven guilty. But I felt like the whole system is that I've had to defend myself all the way along the line. Because he's made an allegation, and he's quite happy to lie to a judge.
Of course.
Anything that comes into his head.
I don't think they even realize they're lying.
They don't. It's just. And once they've said something, that's their world. That's their version of the truth, and it's real.
Yeah.
It might not have been what they said yesterday. Yesterday, they said black was white. Today, white is white. Oh, okay, but tomorrow it might be grey, you know.
Yeah.
And they just, but that's the truth, because they just said it, you know.
And it does frustrate me. It's just so believable.
It makes
they're so good at being convincing. I think that's part of the whole game of you starting to be paranoid and start to question yourself the whole time, is because they're so good at it. And if you don't have records of things, if you don't, keep some kind of order.
Yeah, you're not like that. So you haven't gone along, you know, tracking yourself and justifying your existence and validating yourself. And they've lived in this fantasy world and projected this image to the world for years, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's insane.
I hate to do this, but I've got to go to work shortly. So I might have to sort of
an hour anyway.
We've been just a little more than an hour, but I have really enjoyed a chat with you and chatting, and I would really like that we could have, you know, more time to get another time.
Email me.
Fantastic. Thank
All
you.
right. Enjoy work.
Okay. Yeah. And you. Have a good time. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
That was my conversation with Trish. Hopefully we'll have another one where we dig into narcissism and different subjects and topics together. She does want to do another episode with me, so I think that would be great. And she's looking at starting her own podcast and has invited me to be a guest on her show as well, which sounds like a lot of fun. I appreciate everyone for listening. If you have a story to tell and you feel that you have waited long enough to be able to tell your story and are wanting to be open and, you know, air that with us here on the podcast, feel free to email me. I would love to discuss it with you and possibly bring your story to my podcast as well. Thank you all for listening. Have a great day.